In our Sunday night class, we've been looking this month at increasing our doing and teaching, tying in a little bit with our morning themes as well. But the idea that Jesus went about, as Luke recorded in Acts chapter 1, that Jesus went about both teaching and doing, and certainly an encouragement to us in how we want to live our lives, and then turned kind of getting to look on Sunday night at the examples of some others that really fulfilled that type of quality in their life as well. And tonight we want to look at a couple who I will describe as a breath of fresh air. The more I thought about them, the more I read about them. I have no doubt that's how Paul felt about them in his life. And so we want to think about Aquila and Priscilla. And the particular verse that's assigned is Romans 16, 3 and 5. But I have learned from Mike and Brian, we'll get there. Maybe in the last 5 minutes, we'll get to Romans 16. But I want to start in Acts 18. Acts 18, we're going to try to look at this couple in a bit of a chronological fashion here, because I knew of some of the references and really tried to start putting them together and putting some time frame to these events and mentions of them. The primary account of them is here in Acts chapter 18, and yet we're introduced to them or reminded of them in other places as well. And when you begin in Acts 18, look at about verse 1 through 3, and I'm going to throw somebody under a bus. Tiberius, you're visiting with us. Acts 18, do you mind reading for us just verse 1 through 3?
After these things, he left Athens and went to Corinth, and he found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, having recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. He came to them, and because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them, and they were working. For by trade, they were tent makers.
All right, and so you start Acts 18, and okay, Paul's come to Corinth, and here he finds some fellow co-workers, and he falls in with them. But I want to think about what's been happening up to this point and try to briefly trace out. So Paul's finished up his first missionary journey. He's gone back to Jerusalem. You have the Jerusalem Council, if you will, the meeting there concerning the Jews and the Gentiles and how they're to be treated and taking the gospel to the Gentiles and really understanding, hey, God's extended fellowship to them just as he has us to the Jews. And so, yes, the gospel needs to go forth indeed into all of the world. And so you're starting, backing up at the end of Acts 15 to prepare for a second missionary journey. But this is a journey that's going to be filled with some ups and downs. And I would say, in a sense, though we don't oftentimes think about it, you get your wind knocked out of you right at the beginning. Because you're getting ready to go, and there's a contention. Paul and Barnabas, good friends, co-laborers together. But do we take John Mark? And Paul seems adamant, no, he's not going with us. Barnabas seems fairly adamant, hey, he needs the encouragement, we need to take him, he needs to go. So much so that they determine to go their separate ways. Now, we read that oftentimes as a peaceful, good thing, and I would encourage you to think of it as that, but at the same time, it's got to be a little discouraging to Paul. Hey, I was looking forward to this, we've worked together before, we're having to go our separate ways now. And so you've started this second missionary journey with that event. You go into Derbe and Lystra, and there he takes on Timothy. That's a good start. A young man that's well spoken of in chapter 16, verse 1 through 5. They're able to strengthen a number of congregations in the area. Remember, they're taking this letter as well that's come from Jerusalem concerning extending fellowship unto the Gentiles and the preaching of the gospel. And so things have gone fairly well in Derbe and Lystra. But in verse 6 through 10, we're not told a lot, but he's, if you will, forbidden. He's held back from going certain places that he might have intended to go or thought, hey, that would be a good area to go into. So we can't go into Asia. We can't go into some other areas that we might have thought of. And you get the Macedonian call. that vision to come over. Hey, that's got to be a fire in Paul's bones. Hey, there's people there that need the gospel. We're ready. We've been given the green light. Let's go. And so here, I no doubt, is a great encouragement to them. Let's go on over. And so we start that direction. You go into Philippi. There you meet Lydia. You have the conversion of Lydia in the beginning of Acts chapter 16, about verse 11 through 15. But then you're arrested. That'll take the wind out of you. Arrested for trying to do that which was good. But what are we doing? We're singing and praying at midnight in the jail, and we're given opportunity to preach the gospel to a jailer and to his family, and they're obedient to the gospel. And so that's certainly a great joy, but the leaders of the city are going to come, and it's time for you to go. We'll get you out of prison, but you go on your way. That's a discouragement, no doubt. Hey, Lydia, the jailer, the congregation's planted. Hope things go well, but we've got to move on. And so you leave from Philippi, again, kind of a mixed result there. You go into Thessalonica, about verse 1 through 9 of chapter 17. But the Jews, mainly out of envy, it's told, are going to start rising up people, stirring up people here in the city of Thessalonica so that they are rejected and chased out of the city. As Paul is writing back to the church at Thessalonica in 1 Thessalonians, he's going to remind them that you receive the gospel even in very difficult times. And so I think there's a great appreciation there for the Christians here at Thessalonica, because even in that brief period of time with all that turmoil, there were some who listened. But again, that's no fun, being driven out of that city and now having to be chased basically into another town. And so you come into Berea. Acts 17 and 11, there's some good there. These were more noble than those in Thessalonica. They received the word of God with all readiness of mind, even searching the scriptures daily to see where those things are. So that's an encouragement when we come across those kind of people. But here's those Jews from Thessalonica. They can't leave it alone. And so they follow us down to Berea, and they start stirring up the people there. And now I've got to leave Berea, and I'm going to go down to the city of Athens. And at least there for a little bit, Paul's by himself. And man, this city's neat, but it's discouraging. These are the most idolatrous people. As some have said, you know, it was easier to find an idol on the streets of Athens than it was to find a man. And you had these philosophers who just loved to hear some new thing always. But you're given the opportunity to preach the gospel. And so taken before all of these philosophers and have a great opportunity to preach the gospel. But it's still mixed results. There are those who long to hear more. But there's many who scoff and reject the message when they hear concerning the resurrection of the dead, concerning Jesus Christ. And so doesn't seem, even there at Athens, while you have some success, not a great success story here. Man, I've been called into Macedonia, but it seems like I keep hitting brick walls. And now I go down into Corinth, and I don't know what his mind is going into Corinth, but some describe it as the Las Vegas of the Old Testament or the New Testament world. This is a port city. People are coming and going. They're traveling. You have a lot of trade. And unfortunately, many times in such situations, people don't act the way they ought to. And not only that, with their temples and other things that oftentimes reveled in sexual fornication. It's not a great city as far as a reputation. And so I'm coming down into Corinth, but I read those first three verses, and I've got to think, here's a breath of fresh air. Here's a couple that seems to have some like-mindedness with me. And they invite me in. Now, Aquila and Priscilla are interesting to me, because we know a lot more about them than a lot of other people that are recorded for us on the pages of the Bible. But at the same time, there's not a lot that we know about them. And we have to, I think, be a little bit careful not to be too speculative concerning Aquila and Priscilla. There's a lot of things maybe we can assume, may or they may not be right. They're not exactly recorded for us. Where are Priscilla and Aquila converted? I don't know. Some perhaps think, well, there was this commonality. Paul is coming to Corinth. They've lately come into Corinth. And perhaps Paul taught them the gospel. I'll accept it as a possibility, but I think it odd that that wasn't recorded here when you have this introduction. They're lately come out of Rome. I'm going to suggest to you at least that very likely the gospel has gone to Rome. We know there was congregations there at a date not much longer than this. And so perhaps, yes, they've heard the gospel in Rome. We're already converted. We're already Christians as they come into Corinth. There's some who go so far to say, well, you can't rule out the fact. Who knows? Were Priscilla and Aquila in Jerusalem in Acts chapter 2? I'm not quite ready to necessarily jump there, but I can't say it was an absolute no. But at some point, these people become a faithful Christian couple that's doing a great work for God. And really, in many ways, I'm going to have to leave it there. My supposition, and I want to clearly identify that, is probably we're already Christians. And I think that's part of the breath of fresh air for Paul as he comes into Acts chapter 18, as he's entering Corinth. And here's a couple I've got a lot in common with. We're Jews by human nature, if you will, by lineage. We're Christians by faith, striving to do the same work. Hey, and we're tent makers. We share an occupation. We share kind of a common knowledge. And this is in a time frame when you're going to look back, and Paul talks about being willing to labor and work with his hands to many of these congregations as he writes back to them. And we are reminded Paul would work to help support himself. And so that seems to be even a portion of what he's willing to do here at Corinth. Hey, we'll go to work to support the gospel as we're trying to preach and teach in this area. And so it's very natural that they fall in here with one another. And so seems to be this commonality that they get to strike up. I'm going to throw out a lot of points that just came to my mind. Hospitality comes to mind, that they were willing to help and support one another. Certainly seem to be supportive of the work that Paul is doing, and we're going to see that on a number of occasions. There's the idea there of the support of the gospel. Again, there's a lot of their day-to-day I'm not recorded about. But I wonder if they weren't more the day-to-day laborers. Paul's helping them as he can, but by their labors, Paul's able to do even more as he goes out into the city and talks to people and preaches the gospel. But there certainly seems to be here this idea of working together. And so along those lines, one of the first major lessons I want to think about as you think about Aquila and Priscilla is the concept of what am I offering? What am I doing? And when I look at them, I think about passages such as Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10. They're the wise men saying, whatever you find to do, do it with all your might. Hey, I'm a tent maker. There's something here that I can do that's going to help support the gospel and help support others, that's going to support my family, even as we're striving to be in support of the gospel. And so we're going to work and we're going to labor with our hands. I think about things such as Hebrews 10 and verse 24. We ought to provoke one another, consider one another and provoke unto love and to good works. In the times that Paul mentions Aquila and Priscilla, and as we trace through some of these things, I see a great admiration and a respect that Paul has for them. And I can only suggest that's because, again, they worked closely together, but they were supportive of this work in the ways that they could. Many other passages, when we're reminded in the New Testament that we as Christians are created unto good works, when we're to be a people that are zealous of good works, that really seems to be the heart and intent of this couple as they work together and as they labor in support of the gospel. But the idea is, what can we do? Whether it's talents, whether it's ability, whether it's financial support, whether it's being able to travel and preach and proclaim the gospel, are we doing what we can? That's what I see time and again in this couple as they show up in various places. They're not on the sideline. They're active. They're working and they're laboring with the church. And that's why I suggest to you they have to be at this point a breath of fresh air. Corinth itself is actually going to turn out to be a breath of fresh air because as Paul has been chased through all of these other places, here's a place I found that I can plant my feet for a while. And so he's able to actively stay and labor and work here. They were of the same craft. We mentioned that. They work together. And when we look, let me back up to some of that history I kind of skipped. As we come into Acts 18 and verse 1, it tells us that Aquila and Priscilla have lately come to Corinth. And this because of being driven out of Rome by Claudius and by his edict. Many believe this edict was issued about 49 A.D. By Claudius. Paul is possibly arriving here in Corinth on this second missionary journey about 51 A.D. Likely they've been here maybe a year, maybe very recently, perhaps even days or weeks, but it seems to me to a degree they've somewhat gotten settled and established. But Paul would be able to begin preaching and teaching there as you continue in Acts 18, verse 4 through 6, has some success, but things would get difficult. There's some turmoil even here at Corinth, but this never reaches the same level as Thessalonica or Berea or Athens. And so they're able to stay. In fact, they're able to stay for about a little over a year and a half as you read through verse 7 through 17. But my point is, as you look through that, these days weren't always easy. And so as we talk about them laboring and working together, I'm also going to suggest to you we see those who are working together even in difficult times. You know, sometimes we appreciate those who are by our side when things are easy. Hey, I'm thankful to have a friend. I'm thankful to have a laborer. But sometimes there are those who, at the first sign of some difficulty or turmoil, I don't know where they went. And I'm standing here all alone because they deserted me. But here, things got difficult, and it seems Aquila and Priscilla are still right here by him. There's two times in the New Testament that we read the expression, be not weary in well-doing. In Galatians chapter 6 and verse 9, Paul writes to the Christians at Galatia, or possibly that region. And I would suggest to you, as you work through that context of Galatians chapter 6, that Paul uses this expression, be not weary in well-doing, in regard to the circumstances of life. Sometimes things are easy. Sometimes they're difficult. We're called upon to carry our own load, but sometimes we're called upon to help carry the loads of others too. Circumstances of life sometimes are good and sometimes they're difficult, but the encouragement there in verse 9, don't be weary in well-doing. Regardless of what happens, you keep laboring and working, and that's what I see in this couple. The other occasion that this is written is going to be found in 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 13. And as you read through this context, I would suggest to you that it deals with dealing with brethren that are there in Thessalonica that aren't being what they ought to be. Some are not walking in step as Christians. Some are going to have to be marked and avoided if they don't change their ways. That's never easy. It's not easy sometimes to talk to one who has been a friend and a co-laborer and a co-worker. Hey, you need to get right. I've noticed you've been drifting. You've been walking away into a different step. It's time to come back home. Those aren't easy conversations always. But if you'll read that context, I would suggest to you, as Paul is speaking there in Galatians chapter 3, be not weary in well-doing. Add to that when people disappoint you. So when circumstances, Galatians chapter 6, but people in 1 Thessalonians or 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, when they disappoint you, don't let that sideline you. Our faith, and we're going to deal with that kind of next, but our faith can't be in other people. You see this a lot of good times. I mix up my ones and twos sometimes, so I think I want to be in 1 Corinthians 2, 1 through 5. There it is. When Paul talks about taking the gospel into Corinth, that's what we're dealing with here in Acts 18. When I came to you, I didn't come with excellency of speech or of wisdom, declaring unto you the testimony of God, verse 2, because I determined not to know anything among you save Jesus Christ and Him crucified with you. I was with you in weakness and fear and in much trembling, and my speech and my preaching was not with enticing words of man wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and in power, that your faith should not stand in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. I want you to trust in God. And so when men disappoint, when men let you down, when men, use the expression, it's biblical, when men play the fool because they stop following God, don't you give up. And I see a couple here that said, no, we're going to stay the line regardless of what happens, regardless of whether it gets difficult. And so an introduction to a faithful couple. But then, number two, let me suggest to you the next time, same chapter, but there's a shift. We're going to see this couple. Dustin, you mind reading for us? Let's do Acts 18, and we're going to do 18 through 23. There's going to be a shift in the work, but this couple just keeps on working in the kingdom. Acts chapter 18, verse 18 through 23. Time passes. You have some of these difficulties. Paul even has to move from the synagogue to the here the house of Jason in 18. Some events are getting mixed up in my head, but it's losing me. Justice goes into the house of justice there near the synagogue where he's going to continue the work. So that was one turmoil that had gone there in Athens. They have kind of a tumult, an uprising in the later part of 18. But yet Paul's able to stay there again about a year and a half. Now, again, you open Acts chapter 18 and verse 1. Paul comes to Corinth where he meets Aquila and Priscilla who have lately come from Rome. There's a point I skipped over. At this point in time, the Romans largely don't care, Jew, Christian. You're all the same to us. When they persecuted one, they were persecuting the other. They looked at it, you're just a sect of the Jews. You're of the way. You're of the Pharisees. You're of the Sadducees. I would suggest to you that's kind of how they looked at them. So when Aquila and Priscilla were driven out of Rome because the Jews were expelled, they didn't care whether they were true Jews or Christians at that time. And so they've come, again, haven't been there in Corinth for very long, so they've only stayed in Corinth about a year and a half. Paul gets ready to leave Corinth, and he's going to go further south into, or go back across the sea over into Ephesus, and they go with him. Now, Again, there's another supposition. Why did they go? I can't tell you. Did they travel with Paul? Well, they went one stop and he kept going and they stayed behind. Did they see economic prosperity that might be able to come to them in Ephesus, where there's a good opportunity that opened up for them? Were they going as part of a group going back to help strengthen the church at Ephesus? Had things gotten difficult for them at Corinth, and so they're ready to try somewhere else? I don't think you can go to the pages and of the Bible and really argue any of those. You can see them as possibilities of why they might have gone, but all we know is Paul left Corinth and they went with him. And they go and they stop in Ephesus. They would love, the brethren there would love Paul to stay. He says, no, I've got to keep going. I've got to get back to Jerusalem. But you have Priscilla and Aquila stay behind. And I want to tie that in with the point we finished up with just a moment ago in the idea of not putting our faith in men. That also means I'm not chasing men. And so I don't believe it would be right for Priscilla and Aquila, if they could be of use and they were traveling to help support the gospel and they were traveling to help the work, that's great. And if they had that opportunity and ability, that would be wonderful. I have no doubt Paul would appreciate that. But if they were simply chasing after Paul because their faith was in him, I have no doubt Paul would tell them, you need to stay behind. It's not about me. What I see, rather, is I see a people that are going to bloom where they're planted. They did a great work in Corinth, and now they're going to Ephesus. What brought them there exactly, I don't know. But now they're going to get established here with the church at Ephesus, and they're going to do a good work there. And so sometimes we as brethren can separate and keep doing a great work. We saw it with Paul and Barnabas at the end of Acts chapter 15. But even here, there doesn't seem to be any contention. Just, hey, you keep doing a good work. We're going to stay here and do a good work. There were times that Paul would send Titus or Timothy or others, and he'd say, hey, go here. They need your work. They need your labor. I'm going to go here. There are other times they work together, and all of that's good. But they were always working for the kingdom. And so kingdom work continues is how I kind of titled that section of this history. It could have been. Paul saw the need for them there in Ephesus and asked them to stay behind. Again, I don't have those details, but what I see is them continuing their work with the church wherever they were. There were a few verses I put with that. Colossians chapter 1 and verse 10, that you might be worthy unto the Lord and all pleasing, being fruitful in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. You do the work of the kingdom. At the end of the day, that's what really matters. Am I working for a man? Am I working for a person? Am I working for God? I would encourage us, all of us as Christians, to remember, I'm working for God. Now, we're here laboring together, and we're putting our efforts, and yes, I'm going to submit myself unto an eldership that's leading a congregation, but we're laboring and working together as a unit here in this place, but ultimately I am working for God. And I see that in this couple. Again, other places, you could think about Galatians chapter 1 and verse 10. It doesn't just deal with the concept or idea of listening to another gospel. But even if in that, Paul's reminder to the people, I'm not doing this for any man. If I yet please men, I should not be the servant of God. There's one I'm trying to please. There's one that I'm trying to honor, and that's God. And so, yes, times we draw close to people, and sometimes they encourage us, and sometimes they disappoint us. But I think we always have to be very careful to remember that I'm laboring for God. I think there's also the concept there of 1 Corinthians 12. 1 Corinthians 12, that great chapter that talks about the body, and it relates the physical body to the church and how we labor and work together. We're all different. We're all unique. We all serve our own purposes. We all have our talents. We all have certain abilities that we're stronger in, and some of us are weaker in others. And but yet we work together as a body. And when I see Paul in his missionary journeys, and this person is joining, and that person's leaving, and this person's staying behind, and this group's traveling ahead, I see that coordination. They're all working together for the good of the church. And I see that with Priscilla and Aquila more than I ever necessarily even thought about as you go through some of this this history. Again, wish I knew more about why they made that move. But I hope it was for the good of the church, for the good of the kingdom and abilities that they saw. I'd like to think, again, this is going to be some supposition, that they were willing to put the church first and what it needed, and they weren't chasing what was convenient. I doubt it was easy to move their business. I doubt it was easy to move their book of sale. I doubt it was easy for them to relocate, but they did it. Again, I'd like to think that was for the good of the church. And wherever we can be used, that's what we'll do. But we see that shift to Ephesus. Yes?
It seems like they took Matthew 6:33 in a way that is unbecoming of us.
Yeah.
Because God still blessed their business.
Right. Oh, yeah. And I'll admit to you, as I consider them more, they seem to be of some financial means, and probably for that time, maybe were well-to-do. And we'll see that in some of our next interactions with them. But they were going to put first the kingdom of God, and wherever that led them. And sometimes that can be a challenge for us. And we talked about that even briefly in passing this morning. But sometimes not letting the distractions of this world rule our lives. We understand sometimes they're of necessity. I've got to support my family, got to provide for our own, but trying at the same time to keep a focus on God. And again, they seem to do that well. Probably, if I had to guess, the account for which we really know Aquila and Priscilla is next. And I thought you were raising your hand. Randy, could I have you read Acts 18, verse 26 through 28?
So he began to speak boldly in the synagogue. When Aquila and Priscilla heard him, they took him aside and explained to him the way of God more accurately. And when he had desired to cross to Brethren wrote, exhorting the disciples to receive him. When he arrived, he greatly helped those who had to leave through grace. For he vigorously refuted the Jews publicly, showing from the scriptures that Jesus is the Christ.
I fat-fingered that or looked at it wrong. You can back up into verse 24 to get the fullness of that. But Paul has gone on. He's continued his journey. Aquila and Priscilla have stayed here in Ephesus. And verse 24 introduces us to a young man who we're going to be told by the name of Apollos. He's an eloquent man, mighty in the scriptures, and he's going to come to Ephesus. And he's going to begin preaching. But Aquila and Priscilla are going to hear him and recognize there's something he doesn't know. He doesn't have the fullness of the gospel. The baptism of John at the end of verse 25. And so in verse 26, they're going to take him to the side, expound unto him the way of God more perfectly, and then going to send him on his way, help encourage him. And what's the effect? Verse 28, mightily convicting the Jews and that publicly, showing by the scriptures Jesus was the Christ. What did he not know when he came to Ephesus? He didn't know about Jesus. He didn't know about the death, the burial, the resurrection, the ascension back to God. But now he's going on mightily being able to proclaim about the Christ, about Jesus. And so I titled that section, Acts 18, verse 24 through 28, that they are powerful, influential leaders. But they're working in the background. I'm thankful we have their names recorded. Because it strikes me, even as I think about them, And we know so much about them and so little all at the same time. And that often causes me to pause. But how many people were working in the first century whose names never appear in the scriptures? Even of the apostles. We don't know a lot of what's happening as they're traveling and preaching the gospel. There's a lot of work that's going on. And there's people like Aquila and Priscilla that were working and helping and even teaching others. And so as I consider that account, one of the first things that comes to my mind, they were prepared people. And oftentimes when we read through the pages of Scripture, you read about the things that people did. We don't read about how they got there. Daniel 1 in verse 8, determined in his heart that he was going to honor and please God. I can suppose a few things about his childhood and how he was taught to know and to honor God. I see the effect in his life that's going to continue throughout his life, young and old. I don't really know how he got there. I don't know the exact influences of Aquila and Priscilla. I don't know all the depth of their knowledge and all of their work, but they were ready when they needed it because they heard a man and say, he doesn't know the fullness of the gospel. And so they're able to pull him aside and teach him and expound to him more perfectly the way of the gospel. But if they don't know the gospel, they're not going to recognize that he's preaching anything differently. If they don't know the gospel, they're not going to have the tools and ability to talk to him and to teach him more perfectly. And so there was work that had already been done to prepare them for where they found themselves in life in Ephesus. And perhaps this is the very reason, who knoweth, if it wasn't God's will, that they were there for that very moment. To have that influence with Apollos. And when you think about that interaction with Apollos, when I read verse 28 of Acts chapter 18, my mind just kind of swims. How many thousands? How many millions? I don't know. Were influenced by Apollos as he powerfully proclaimed the word of God, and he impacted people's lives, and they went forth in turn and impacted other people's lives and influenced the spread of the gospel. And nobody knows about a Priscilla and Aquila that were sitting back in Ephesus, and they were the ones that helped teach him more perfectly the way of God so that he would be able to have that knowledge and ability to go forth into the world. When you have a conversation with somebody, when you plant the seed of the Word of God in the heart of an individual, who knows what that seed's going to grow up and do? We're talking about increase all year. You plant that little seed, and the seed is the Word of God, and it goes forth and spreads and multiplies. Who knows what influence and impact that you have on many others in the rest of your life, and hopefully even beyond. I've often said, and so far they haven't messed it up. Keep it up. Others have said it too. I hope my children are better than I am. But if that's true, that means they're going to go forth and have even more impact on people than I ever dreamed of or imagined. And I hope we'll keep a faithfulness going for generations and generations and generations as long as this world stands. So who knows what you might do in your life? The impacted people. I don't have time to go there. I skipped this in talking about a prepared people. I want you to just jot this down. Think about it as you're mulling and trying to go to sleep tonight. Let it keep you awake. Genesis chapter 18 and verse 19. God said of Abraham, I know him, that he'll command his children after him. There was a reason God chose Abraham. And Abraham and his faithfulness was going to influence generations. Nation was going to come out of him. You combine that with Job 1 and verse 8. As God says unto Satan, have you considered my servant Job? There's none like him. That's God's evaluation of a man. I know him. Can God say that of us? I know him. I know the work they're going to do. I wonder, again, supposition, God didn't say, I need those people in Ephesus, because I know the work they're going to do. And they're going to do great work that's going to have influence on others. That impact. The other thing I'll point out, this is a whole lesson that you could talk about Apollos and them, but I'm going to suggest to you their wisdom. I don't know if I would have done everything the way they did, but there doesn't seem to be any discouragement of the way they handled things. Actually, knowing my nature, I would have handled the way they did. But I know some brethren that said they sinned because they didn't immediately stand up as soon as they heard Apollos and say, you're wrong. I would suggest to you they used great wisdom to see how are we best going to be able to help this man, to not destroy him, but to help correct him and to help build him up. They could have shot him down and destroyed him right there on the scene. You are a false teacher. You don't know what you're talking about. The baptism of John is way past, and you are just wrong. And he might have gone home discouraged. And so they, in wisdom, pull him aside and say, hey, we need to talk. We need to study. And let's work that out. And in doing so, they send him on. And not only just does he correct it, but they seem to send him on with support and encouragement, even letters to go on to the places that he's going to go, receive this man. And he goes on to do that great work. Tie in with that Jude 22 and verse 23. Of some have compassion, making a difference, and others save with fear, pulling them out of the fire, even hating the garment stained or spoiled by the flesh. There's some wisdom there in how we handle people. And I would suggest to you, Priscilla and Aquila used great wisdom in how they handled a situation that it could turn out to be the best. And when you see the departing here and they go their ways and they are of great encouragement one to another, that was a job well done. This next point, again, there's no verse for, and that's somewhat on purpose. They're a humble people. Paul left Ephesus. They stayed behind at Ephesus. They taught Apollos the gospel, and Apollos went on his way. When you turn into Acts chapter 19, Paul comes back through this region now. And he encounters some who, again, I think you have to use some supposition, but possibly had been taught by Apollos, so they didn't know the baptism of repentance for the remission of sin, only the baptism of John. And so Paul is going to address that there with them. Potentially, they had been taught by Apollos. I can't prove that, but that would seem logical. But after that account in Acts chapter 19, Paul is here at Ephesus. In fact, Paul is going to be here at Ephesus for 3 years. And he doesn't depart until Acts chapter 20. And I challenge you to read through Acts chapter 19 and Acts chapter 20 and find even the slightest reference of Priscilla and Aquila. And you're not going to find it. At least you're not going to find it there. Luke Leonard, do you mind reading for us? Read for us, if you will, 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 19. 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 19. Paul left them at Ephesus. He's come back. He's now on his third missionary journey. He's coming back into Ephesus, perhaps around this 54-57 AD time frame. And Paul's back, but he doesn't mention them. He doesn't mention them in the work at Ephesus. But here at Ephesus, Paul is going to write the letter 1 Corinthians back to Corinth. And again, we roughly put a date on that of about 54 to 57 AD. And so it would arrange in that time. He's come back. Priscilla and Aquila, no note that they've gone on anywhere. In fact, you turn into 1 Corinthians chapter 16 as he's writing up that letter, and he sends greeting to the church at Corinth from Priscilla and Aquila, who are at Ephesus, where the letter, 1 Corinthians, being written from. And so in the work log of Acts 8, 19, and 20, there's no reference to them. But guess what? They're still there working. In fact, the detail we learn in 1 Corinthians chapter 16 is there's a church that's meeting in their house. They're encouraging the church. They're building them up. They're still active and working and laboring there, even though we don't read anything of them. And that ought to be an encouragement to us. It doesn't matter what we're doing. I don't have to be recognized by men. God knows the work that I'm doing. I can keep on laboring, regardless of if I have a title, regardless of if I have acknowledgement, regardless if I'm torn down by men for the work that I'm doing that's good. I need to keep on doing it. And so Aquila and Priscilla aren't mentioned there in that work log, if you will, but yet they're still there laboring and working regardless of who knew it. Not only that, I'm going to suggest to you, as you read Acts chapter 19 and 20 again, this was a difficult time. Luke, if you're still there, sorry I threw you off, but read for us 1 Corinthians 16, verse 8 and 9. And this would be during that time Paul's writing this letter, and so Aquila and Priscilla are still there laboring, and again, the church is in their house, and this is the environment in which they're laboring in Ephesus. Yes, sir. There's a great door here. There's a lot of opportunity, but there's a lot of adversaries. There's a lot of people that are fighting against us too. It's not necessarily easy, but here's this couple that's still being faithful. Here's the couple that's still supporting the church. Here's the couple that's still laboring and working in anonymity that a lot of people don't know about. And in fact, we'd miss it there in Acts 18 and verse 19, 18 and 20. Excuse me, 19 and 20, except we know they still got to be there because of 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verse 8, 19. And so that's actually, what is that, fourth reference that we find them in, and I just entitled that The Encouraging Couple. No doubt that church in Corinth remembers them. Oh yeah, they were here probably for a span of at least a year and a half, maybe 2 years, or possibly even a hair longer. They're going to remember Priscilla and Aquila, probably remembered well by the church in Corinth, continues to show their support and that they're active in the kingdom, and that they are encouraging. My point I wrote down on that is, be somebody that encourages others. If somebody wrote a letter, and Wesley, I'm going to pick on you, you're close by. I wrote a letter to somebody, and I said, hope you're doing well. And Wesley sends his greetings. He hopes you're doing well as well. Is that going to mean anything to them? Well, the first question is, who is it? Do they even know who Wesley is? But the second question is, are these the people we remember fondly? Are these the people that we're doing good works? Are these people that means a lot to me, that they're still thinking about me, that they're still praying for me? And that's an encouragement to me. It's an encouragement to us to be faithful. Paul does this in his writings. 2 Corinthians 8, I want you to know of the churches of Macedonia who above measure, out of their poverty, abounded into the work that they gave unto us of the Lord. Turn over for just a moment and look at the book of 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians, I want you to just notice the reference in chapter 1 and verse 7. It's really the context of the whole chapter. But as he's writing to the church at Thessalonica, he says, you are examples to all that believe in Macedonia and Achaia. In fact, he goes on and he says, from you sounded out the word of the Lord, not only in Macedonia and Achaia, but also in every place your faith to God word is spread abroad, so that we need not speak anything. I don't even have to tell them. They already know about the work and the labor that you're doing. Be a people that encourage others. That's individually. That's as a family. Be a family that encourages the other families here to do all that they can be all that they can be, to be faithful. Let's be a congregation that others hear about. Say, man, good to hear about Ninth and Main. They're out there in West Texas, and you know some of the places out here in West Texas, it's not as bad as up north, but you got to travel a little bit sometimes. But they're holding strong. Be a congregation that people are going to know, hey, they're working and they're laboring for the Lord, and that's going to be an encouragement to us. I want to keep up that good work too. And so be that kind of encouraging people. I lied to you. I didn't get there with 5 minutes to spare. I got there with 2 minutes to spare. Romans 16, that was my lesson for tonight.
I was thinking you said
you still haven't got there. I know, and I still got a prayer. Romans 16, go there briefly. By this time, as Paul is writing to the church at Rome, this is a bit of history I don't know that I can exactly explain to you. The church was in the home of Aquila and Priscilla in Ephesus when Paul wrote the book of Corinthians. And again, that letter may be about 54 to 57 AD. Paul is writing the church at Rome probably not much after that. Again, most of the time we send that letter about 54 to 57. But Claudius has died in 54 AD. And with that, the decree that he issued is no longer in force. And so the Jews and Christians are able to start going back into Rome. And it seems Aquila and Priscilla have gone back home. And when you wrap up the book of Romans, you're going to find the reference to them in Romans 16. And you're going to find there, I think, as I did this study, maybe it clicked with me more than it ever had. Why? Think of all that we've talked about. Think of the relationship. And think of the possibility. Paul has come back to Ephesus, finds this couple still here, still active, still laboring. Church is working in their home. And at some point in that period, they determine it's time to go back home. This is the kind of couple you don't want to see leave. And perhaps you're heartbroken. And you'll shed tears as they leave and they go back to Rome. But by the time I reach Romans chapter 16, and Paul is writing in verse 3 through 5, greet Priscilla and Aquila, my helpers in Christ Jesus, who have for my life laid down their own necks, unto whom not only I give thanks, but also all the churches of the Gentiles. Likewise, greet the church that's in their house. Salute my well-beloved Epaphroditus, who is the first fruits in Achaia unto Christ. It seems they've gone back to Rome and wasted no time establishing the church within their home, and they're still being faithful. And if that timeline is right in what happened, it makes all the more sense to me. This probably isn't very long that they've been back, that Paul is now writing, and I still miss them. Man, I love those brothers and that sister. And again, their supposition, I don't know what he's talking about there in Romans chapter 16. There's some possibilities of verse 4. Was it the riot at Ephesus? Was it the occasion in Corinth? Was it some other time that, hey, they were there ready to fight for me? They kept me from maybe out of that riot in which I was going to be torn apart. But it does seem to some degree, hey, they stood between me and death. They loved me enough. They spared my life. And because of that, I was able to go forth and do great work. So even all the churches of this area, they appreciate Aquila and Priscilla. And guess what? They're the same people. That's the other kind of people we need to be. I don't care if you're in Corinth or if you're in Ephesus or if you're in Rome. I want to know you're faithful. Paul wrote to congregation. He said, I don't care if I'm there with you or if I'm separate from you. I want to know that you're faithful. Here was a couple that was faithful wherever they went because it seems they wasted no time in establishing the church in their home. And there they are laboring and working again. And so consistency, encouragers, supporting that work local church. Paul looked on them in great love as a lifesaver unto him. And so certainly, I think I understand maybe even more that heartfelt appreciation for them. And I'm going to have to wrap up. Last reference to them is in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 19. Likely the exact same people. I think here we do, at least in the King James, have Prisca and Aquila. But that was a common change of name. And Paul is able, as he's writing unto Timothy, to also send greetings from Rome. But I'm going to suggest to you, it seems like maybe they've gone back to Ephesus. Again, don't understand all of that timeline, but as he's writing back to 2 Timothy, now we're probably about 64, 67 AD. So they could have had some 5 to 8 years at home in Rome, and now they've gone back to Ephesus. Was it that they were somewhat transient? Was it that the job took them somewhere? Did they spend some time at home in Rome, and now they've gone back to Ephesus? You know, I can't answer that. It's not recorded for us. But he sends greetings from their home from Ephesus to Corinth, churches in their home. He sends letters to Rome, and he says, greet Aquila and Priscilla and the church that's in their home. It's there. And by the time he's writing 2 Timothy, hey, send greetings to the church that are in Priscilla and Aquila's home. And so I wrap that up, 1 Timothy 4:19, label that fond memories. This is a people that I've crossed paths with all my life, and they're special to me. They've been a great encouragement in the Lord, and we need friends like that in our lives. And so he sends greetings by way of Timothy's letter, and they are still very precious to him. I've appreciated Priscilla and Aquila before, but as I got to study them this time, all that appreciation grew all the much stronger. And I think certainly as we look at them, I hope they're an encouragement to us. I don't live the same life they did. I don't know all the details of their lives. But what I see through them is a consistent faithfulness wherever they went, working and laboring in the church and helping anyone that they could. And if I can be like that, that's a life well lived. That's the kind of life that goes forth doing and teaching just as Jesus did. And so I certainly greatly appreciate them. Thank you for your time. And even, I was going to say an extra minute, maybe an extra 5 minutes, but I'm going to let Eric close us out in prayer.